and welcome back to The Way Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm Izzy, and I'm joined with my wonderful co-hosts.
Mateus.
And Michelle.
Oh my gosh, how fun. And today, we are jumping into a new series of looking at Joseph. I love Joseph.
Mate, Mary and Joseph, favourite Bible characters.
Okay, different Joseph. No. We are looking at Joseph from the Old Testament, the one that musicals have been written about. Oh, I was worried that there's another Joseph that musicals are written about. No, I think so. Joseph and Technicolor Dreamcoat. Check it out. I have the movie bought on my phone and I never regretted it. You guys don't know it very well, but that's fine. I love Joseph. Mateus, do you like Joseph?
I grew up, well, there's famous DreamWorks cartoon about Joseph.
Oh my
Joseph.
Gosh, that's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's incredible, and incredible like visuals as well.
The cinematography is top notch.
The cinematography, it's great. I loved that. And the Bible story is based on that story, so...
We were chatting before and you were saying that you didn't like Joseph.
Okay, when I... It's a bit tangenty, but when I was first reading the Bible as a young Christian, I had some problems with Joseph, but maybe we can get into that.
We'll get into...
Yeah.
Michelle, how do you feel about Joseph?
I think there's a lot to learn from Joseph's life. He's a bit of a hectic character, not gonna lie. He just thinks... Yeah, anyways, we can dive into that.
We'll dive into it.
Should we dive into it?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. Let's do it. Let's
start
read
from the
it.
Beginning. Should we give a bit of context, actually, to what we're jumping into? We're jumping into Genesis 37. Mm-hmm. But building up to that, we've got 36 chapters of the Bible that Mateus is going to give a brief rundown.
Yeah, this is like this story starts off in a moment in like, the biblical story right at the beginning. So it's like, there's not much that happens in the biblical story before we see Joseph. But what we do see, which is the main, most significant context, which I think I'll bring, is the context to his own family. Because he's only a couple generations away from Abraham, which God met and gave this huge, important covenant to, which we'll keep coming back to throughout the biblical story. But then after Abraham, you have Isaac, and after Isaac, Jacob, and Jacob is Joseph's like son.
Wait, Jacob is Joseph's
son.
Joseph is Jacob's son. Jacob is Joseph's dad.
Yes. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. And so it's like this covenant that God has given is very relevant and recent in the biblical story. And so it's almost like they're still on that journey, this family, which God has said he will multiply their offspring and they'll be as plentiful as the stars, right? It's very recent and it's still part of their life.
And Jacob is the brother of Esau. He stole his brother's inheritance from his dad, who was blind, because of over food, essentially.
crazy story.
Food
over food, because Esau was the like the bigger brother that had he was stronger, and he would go out to the sheep and tend to them, and he was out on the field all the time and he was hungry. But then his brother Joseph, the dad of
Jacob
the dad of Joseph,
did a great job with this guy.
He wanted more of the inheritance that his brother got, because he didn't get that because he was seen as like the weaker brother. So then he obviously, I don't know, pretended to be his brother, putting skin on his arm and getting his dad to touch it, whatever. But that was just a little bit more context of
basically,
who Jacob is.
Jacob, bit of a sneaky guy.
He's got a big old story. Read that one.
Yeah.
Read that one.
Very sneaky guy. We're going to see it later, but brother wrestles with God. And he also trades a Big Mac meal for an inheritance. You know, that's a
insane.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Some,
and Esau lost his whole like first child inheritance for a meal, which is also tough on him.
So yeah.
Should we dive straight in?
Let's go.
So we're going to go to Joseph, not Jacob, but that's the context.
Yeah.
That we may have made it more messy, but you know what? Just read it and then you'll get it. So it's fine.
No, hopefully that gives you a little bit more context as to who Jacob is
and how he fits in. Yeah.
Yeah. Verse 1-4. Does anyone
want to read it? I'll read it. I'll read it. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17 years, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. His father's wife, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of the other sons because he had been born to him in his old age and made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him.
Whoa.
So nice family dynamic.
Izzy, break down these verses for us.
Okay, so basically the family is a bit complex to understand. There is lots of brothers, lots of people involved, but basically at the gist of it all is that Joseph was the favorite to the dad, Jacob, and Jacob showed that and gave him this ornate cobe or ornamental, whatever your what translation said.
Yeah.
And showed his love very clearly, that he loved Joseph more than the other sons, which then led to the brothers hating Joseph. And so the family dynamic was probably a little bit tense, I would argue. Well, it's written in the Bible, it's the Bible would argue. And he also then reported back on the other brothers. So therefore, Joseph was a little bit of a snitch. And he was also one of the youngest at the time, I think. I don't know if Benjamin was around yet or not.
Not yet.
So he was the youngest reporting on the older brothers. And so the dynamics, yeah.
Yeah, it says, where did it say? He gave back to his father a bad report of his brothers.
Which we don't know if it could be maybe a true report, but still.
Not putting him in the good books. No,
he's the youngest sibling anyway. He hasn't got a lot going for him. Do you know what I mean? He's got 10 others older than him.
And he's the favourite.
But the thing is, it's like, it's a complete reverse, do you know what I mean? Of what favour usually looks like in that family dynamic. Because it's usually the eldest son that gets that.
Yeah.
One, like the ornated robe, technicolor dream coat, whatever you want to call it. But then also, like the birthright and all of that, like Joseph definitely had more of that than the rest of his brothers, which you can see clearly why that would make the brothers so annoyed, because they're like, but he's the youngest, why does he get all of that?
Yeah.
And the fact that like his brothers go out into the field,
do the work,
doing all the hard work, and he doesn't. He just like goes and checks up on them, and he reports back to his dad. But then he goes back to his dad and says, "Oh, these guys are doing an absolutely terrible job. What they're doing?"
Yeah,
like he's not making it easy for himself at all in this case,
and then makes it a lot worse for himself. As we then go on to hear about his dreams, which, do you want to read them or do we summarize them?
We can read it.
Let's read them.
Michelle, do you read them for us?
Yeah, let's do it. Verse 5 to 11. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood up upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matters in mind. So Joseph here is really just stirring the pot at this point.
Bless him. Well, these dreams are prophetic dreams from God, but instead of using wisdom in it and choosing how to process this and talking in a private setting, or I don't know, mm-hmm. whatever you're meant to do mm-hmm. when you have prophetic dreams. Mm-hmm. He instead announces it to all his brothers and his family, how they're all going to bow down to him.
Right. And the thing is, something that we can learn from this is that God can often tell us things and give us dreams for things in our own lives that we don't actually need to necessarily share with everybody around us. Do you know what I mean? Like
it's using wisdom,
but then also here, just in context of Joseph, like he was a young boy, 17-year-old. He was just like, guys, listen to what I like have been given in a dream. Like, listen to what I have to say. And like, he's not thinking about the future. He's not thinking about the hearts of others. He's actually thinking about himself.
Yeah.
Which is putting him in a sticky position.
We don't know how, if he knew these dreams were from God. Like, we don't know if he knew these dreams were, prophetic, or if they were, because I'd have whack dreams every night and like they never mean anything. I don't know if he thought they didn't mean anything, or if he knew they actually were, you know, speaking into the future. Hmm. But
maybe not about like, I completely agree with that.
But he also, either way, like, didn't use much wisdom in it at all.
Oh, no, totally not. But the thing is, he knew that the wheat sheaves, like, were his brothers.
Mm.
And the fact that he was saying, oh, it was me, like, mine, like, stood up in the middle and you guys, like, stood all around me and bowed down to me. And, like, you know, he knew that it was talking about his brothers. And I reckon if he, like, put two and two together, he was like, oh, maybe this is something that I could, you know. And it's just funny that he just thought it was, like, a clever idea to, like, go and tell everyone, guys, y'all are going to bow down to me.
Matt, have you got any thoughts?
Yeah, I guess it's just, like, the things that we can learn from Joseph's behaviour here is maybe just an invitation to be a little bit more self-aware in the way that we, even if it's good things, you know, that we receive from God, but the way that we steward those things. Because there are ways that we can steward them well,
mm-hmm.
and there are ways that we can steward them maybe a little bit unwisely, that can cause hurt or tension within relationships,
jealousy
even, and of course, if someone else is jealous of you, you're not the one actually that's like partaking in envy or jealousy.
Mm.
But you also don't want to be the person that's causing that in someone else, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, yes, you're not the one that's actually being envious, but
you can be absolutely prodding them.
But you're the one that's stoking that in somebody else. And so you're not acting very lovingly, you're not acting very wisely. And so there is an invitation just to be self-aware,
mm-hmm.
because there are good things that we're going to be given in this world. But there is a wise way to mm-hmm. go about it, even in the amount of things we share with people.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And then I'm even like, there is even a moment in Mary's life.
Mary and Joseph,
where she's encountered by the angel Gabriel, and she's given all these great promises by the angel Gabriel about Jesus and who Jesus is going to be. But later on, you don't see her running around town telling everybody. It says she stored them in her heart. Mm-hmm. She kept them in. Not because she was...
Right.
Doubting of what these things were saying, or whether they were going to come into fruition, but because they weren't meant for everybody.
Yeah.
It was something that was given to her, and she wasn't meant to go proclaim it on the mountain fields, for example, you know?
Yeah, which is so right. And she cherished it, and she like adored it in her own heart, and like kept it for herself. Mm-hmm. And then in due time, it came out, mm-hmm. you know? So
yeah, it'll come through.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then a second point, maybe on like the other side, and I guess we can maybe even start talking about this as well, but maybe the brothers in the situation felt like there was justification for their envy or their hatred. But as we see the story continue, their envy and their bitterness doesn't actually justify anything, and actually it leads them into a darker place as a group of people,
absolutely,
leading them to more drastic decisions. But we can keep reading about that. So maybe envy also isn't just. That's not what we're trying to say.
Yeah,
that being envious is justified.
Definitely not. And I think going back to Joseph for a moment, like he did have a great call on his life, and these are really big prophecies and promises that God's making to him. But actually, as we go on for the rest of the story and the rest of the series, that we see he goes through so much humbling before he's actually raised up into that position. Mm. And so I think it's really amazing we get to see the before and see all that he goes through before getting to the after.
Huge maturing story, isn't it?
Well, and it's a long story. It's, it's his whole life. Like, it's, we're starting at 17 and end when he's an actual man. I don't think he's, I don't know how old he goes on to, but he's at least in like, it's a good couple of decades, isn't it, really?
It's like a prime example of like learning from your mistakes.
Literally. Vibes. Well, and I think he's forced to be honest.
Oh, yeah, no, honestly.
But I think that's really, yeah, I think that's also a real challenge when we feel like we've got promises and been told stuff, or we feel like God's got a call in our lives and got promises for our lives, actually, with great, great power. No, with, well, the great calling is actually it's a great preparation, and we've got to be also prepared to go through that and be open to almost go through all that Joseph went through as well. Mm-hmm. But next we look at his brother's actions, and they do a lot of stuff. Mateus, do you want to give us a little overview?
The brothers are extremely envious at this moment. Mm-hmm. Joseph has clearly poked some buttons on them, and
for
a long time. And they are in a town, and their father sends them. And I will just paraphrase over this bit, right? But their father sends Joseph to go find the brothers to give a report on them. And Joseph finds them, but the brothers, when he arrives, had plot to kill him, basically. Mm. They were going to kill him on
the spot. Which was like quite an extreme response.
Which is a very extreme response.
And they say, like, here comes the dreamer, and was like mocking him. There he is.
Yeah.
I know I call my younger brother names, but I've never plot to kill him.
Yeah, exactly. There's name calling, then there's death.
You know, they plot to kill him, but
that's crazy. Sorry. Thank the Lord that Mateus hasn't decided to plot death.
I have never. I shall never. it says, do you want to carry on? Because I don't know what brother decides
it's
not.
It's Reuben. It's Reuben. So essentially, the brothers want to kill, and they decide to plot their killing of poor little Joseph. Arrogant Joseph.
Poor little Joseph.
Reuben is one of the brothers that says, hey guys, like, he's actually our blood. Like, he's of our blood. We shouldn't actually kill him. Why don't we just throw him into a well? What is it?
Yeah, pit.
Into a pit.
Teach him a lesson.
Maybe he can learn from it. So then he persuades the other brothers to do so instead of killing him. So then they do that. And Reuben goes away because the rest of the brothers sit around having food and, you know, having a merry time. And they just sort of they're like, oh, why don't we just sell our brother instead to these merchants? And they do that for 20 silver shekels or whatever.
It's not much money they give him for.
Oh no, I think it was a lot of money.
No, I don't think it was much. Was it?
I think I did a little Google search.
Oh, did you? What did Google say?
20 silver coins is converted to dollars. It's actually $200 in our
a lot.
Time.
That's not a lot for a brother
in our time.
For a brother
back then, it must have been a lot of money.
I would sell you for a lot more.
That's so nice.
But back to it. They sell Joseph off, and then Reuben comes back because he's like, oh my gosh, okay, let's try and get our brother out of this pit. And he comes to find, you know, his cloak, Joseph's cloak, all bloody and ripped up. So he's assuming, oh my gosh, they've killed my brother. So he takes it and he takes it back to his dad, and he's like, Joseph's dead.
Hmm.
So Jacob's like mourning. My son is dead. My favorite son is gone.
Which also shows the level of their deep anger, but they're willing. They knew how much it was going to hurt their father.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're willing to do that. And even like discuss selling Joseph and all this stuff in earshot, probably on of Joseph. It's a deep hatred. It is a deep, like, they do not have a relationship with each other. Uh-uh. Like, deep hatred.
No, and they didn't care. And the fact that they, like, even thought about, like, oh, let's trick Dad and, you know, the other brother, Reuben, that he's actually dead by, like, killing a goat and dipping his cloak in the blood. Like, it just goes to show how they were, like, thinking about it, sitting on it for a long time. Like, this hatred.
It's a result of envy.
Oh, no, totally.
Because it's what envy does in our hearts is that it builds bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter. We're not saying that you're going to become a murderer if you are envious of somebody. But it will create calluses in your heart towards that person, which will make it harder and harder for you to love them. And another thing that envy does is that it creates almost like an entitlement for unforgiveness in your heart as well. That you're not able to, like, forgive or love on that person. And again, there's just self-awareness. Like, is there a person or a thing that you have this callous towards? And an invitation then for you to invite the Holy Spirit to come and say, actually, would you soften this hard part of my heart towards this person? Because I don't want to be bitter,
really,
because I want to be able to love them. Because this is an example of a group of brothers that they let that callous grow and grow and grow until the point where they were willing to do unspeakable things to their own blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot imagine the anger that Joseph would have felt towards them and the injustice of, because actually, he's being a bit annoying, but
they are still brothers.
And the level of just, like, they just want to disown him and get rid of him.
Yeah.
And actually, and to be fair to Joseph, he doesn't speak a bad word about them. Like, he doesn't say, like, there's nothing written in here that shows him, even, like, later on when the redemption story all comes round, like, he does carry himself well, I would say.
He must have been feeling really lonely as well. I mean, he only had his dad really to talk to, but his dad just, like, ushy-gushied him up. Do you know what I mean?
And then thrown in a well and sold to slavery, and then they're like, okay, bye.
Yeah, and he went through so much, which we can then dive into now.
Let's do it. So Joseph is sold into slavery, and he is sold into the house of Potiphar. So where does it say that? Oh, there we go. Chapter 39 of Genesis. You know what? When I'm doing this, every single song of the musical is going through my head. You guys aren't the biggest fans of Joseph's musical, but that's okay, because in my head, I've got every single song. Also, there's a fantastic VeggieTale episode, and it's all Western themed. So he's like a cowboy, and it goes, oh, little Joe. It's great. It's fantastic. Would also recommend some other resources dive into after this podcast. I love, you know what? VeggieTales are fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note,
side note,
little wonder. So Joseph and Potiphar's wife is the section we're about to read. There is so much to learn from this category. I hate reading, so I'm actually going to pass the responsibility on to someone else.
Okay, I can read it.
Yeah.
Verse 1-6. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him for the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of this Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care, with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome.
Oh, ending there.
Lol. You know that's such a funny part to end on.
To Joseph's credit, I like Joseph. You guys are kind of Joseph haters a little bit.
Hey, since when did I say that? I'm a big fan of Joseph.
But I know, but like, even like to begin, like, okay, Mateus is a Joseph hater.
I said when I first read this.
Okay, well, I'm going to change your mind because I just, you know what? He does just have God's favor on him and he has the blessing of God on him. And I think we can also ourselves, we're really jealous when we see that in other people, when we see them being given opportunity and we see them, like God obviously working in them. And this is so evident. Like, yes, he's blessed by his father. And that's Jacob's not super good wisdom there of, you know, pointing him out. But even here in Potiphar's household is actually Joseph was really favored and God was really with him and blessed him. Mm. And like, imagine having like a work, even think of a work setting of having someone that you don't have to worry, when it's under their care, you don't have to worry. Like they're so competent, they are so able, like everything under Joseph's care, Potiphar didn't have to worry about. And it was like, actually he worked hard, he was competent, he did, even though he was unfairly put into slavery, he was like, I'm going to serve and I'm going to do my best job and take care of everything that's under my remit. And I respect him for that. I like that for him.
Mm. And it goes to show his character as well.
Mm-hmm. It's already growing.
Already growing. And I think what we could learn from like the few verses that we've read is that it sort of reminds me of a scripture in Romans 8 where it says, if God is for us, who could be against us?
Yeah.
Joseph tons of friends. I mean, not friends. Tons of like opposition from his family, but still had favor with God.
Yeah.
And he saw that visibly come to fruition in being Potiphar's, initially his servant, but then ended up being this attendant in his house instead and, you know, taking care of everything that was Potiphar's, which is a great responsibility, but then goes to show that, like, even in our own lives, there might be opposition that we receive from those around us that they don't either believe in us or they think, like, you know, that couldn't be possible. We get opposition just like, oh, no, that is... you can't do that vibes. If God is for us, who can be against us? You know, so if God has called you into an area to work in or to bring light in, then really hold on to a word that God's given you that like no one can be against you if God's got you. And he's like, he's there for you, you know? So
that's a clear theme in the life of Joseph. Mm. Huge theme. He has God's favor.
Mm-hmm.
He is with God. It says in the story of Joseph, actually, four times is it repeated, the Lord was with him. As in God was with him. And two of those times was just in that passage.
Wow.
You know, like the Lord was with him. Mm-hmm. He had the favor of the Lord. And so he was walking with God. And even if at times he doesn't act as wise, it's clear that the Lord is with him, but he's also attentive to what the Lord is doing and what the Lord is saying. Later on, we even hear him like listening to God's voice while he interprets dreams. But yeah, he's got something special in his life. And the story is clearly building him up for something great, having to go and go from being like the business in his own house to nothing in someone else's house.
Mm.
That like change in perspective. And then maybe even the arc that can bring to someone's life, the maturity that would bring. And I wonder whether maybe he does feel that actually he's still meant for greatness, but maybe even as through this process of humbling, through the process of him being in slavery, he's actually been able to grow and actually, instead of looking at himself so much through the eyes of his father or even through the eyes of the dreams that he had, he starts to look at God and starts humbling himself, being like, actually, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just a man and I actually don't deserve anything. And that even like leads on to the next part of the story where he's encouraged to step into something that would be very beneficial in one way for him.
Mm.
But actually he understands that he humbles himself. So he understands that he has a responsibility to be integrous and he steps away. So even there's even this journey that Joseph's going on where he's going and humbling himself, looking less at himself, but thinking less of himself and thinking more of the people around him, and even God.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there's an aspect to that as well.
Yeah.
This shift of his character, like you said, mm-hmm. to like this young boy, this arrogant boy that just thinks he's a bee's knees, to an emerging leader and a man amongst difficulty, amongst trial. You can see his like trustworthiness, his loyalty, and like how he's like wanting to honor one his master. We can now actually move on and read into it. Mm-hmm. But you can just see this incredible shift in his character that has built through a humbling experience.
Well, I do think it is through suffering and through hard times that our character is really built.
Mm. No, yeah, totally.
And I think like that's God turning it for good is in those moments where he's with us good. And he makes us more like him and his heart. And I think we see that in Joseph. It is, it is through this suffering and through this real difficult time that is his character that has been changed into the man that he needs to be
this leader.
Yeah.
Mm. And so maybe there's even encouragement that
if
you're going through a moment of suffering mm-hmm. or of hardship, not to dwell on like, oh, this is so hard. And I say that with the utmost sympathy, empathy for what people might be going through. But there is also encouragement just to turn to God and say, Lord, in this storm, in this pain, what are you trying to teach me?
Which is really good.
Where are the moments where are the places I am able to mature through this suffering?
Good Matthias.
Just as Joseph has matured.
Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the verse in the Bible where it says, consider it pure joy that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Mm. Like that's a very... very example of it, right?
Absolutely.
Should we move on? Should we read?
Yeah.
So from verse 7, I think. Awesome. Where are we going until?
I've lost myself. He was a handsome man.
12. Awesome.
As he was.
Do you want to read?
No, not at all. I'm so bad at reading.
It's okay. It's okay. I can read.
Thank you. You're so good at reading.
Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. That's just honestly, again, shows you his character. He cares, he fears God more than he does fear man, and like what this woman, one, is like asking of him, and two, like he doesn't say, oh no, but Potiphar wouldn't like that. He goes, no, but why would I sin against God? And it just goes to show his character and how he like, he cares more about what God has to say about him and being judged rightly before him than like man, which is something that we could so learn from.
I think it's really practical advice in here of how you deal with temptation, where actually it's pointing out, saying what it is, bringing God into it, and then literally removing himself from the situation every single day.
He ran.
Like, well, and then it literally to the point where she is holding his clothes and he runs away. It's like, have you ever been at the point of temptation where we'll bring down the stakes a little bit, where I'm like, I just really want that chocolate on the table. And I'm like, you know what? If I actually cannot help myself because I'm trapped in a room with it, run away.
Yeah.
Like run far. Like that is genuinely a biblical answer.
Yeah.
On how to resist those situations. Just get yourself out of there.
Right. He like, it reminds me of the scripture in 1 Corinthians 6:18, where it says to like flee from sexual temptation. And flee literally means run away. Man's did that. He ran.
He ran.
He like left his cloak.
Well, and you know what? She's trapped him as well. So she's put this. So this the day with he words. The day where we ended on there, where she's holding his cloak and he runs out, there's no one else there. So she's planned for no other servants to be there. She's planned for them to be alone. She has planned so she's planned to go against what he has said, what he's said, like God cares about. She wants to go against what Potiphar and you know what? I don't know what kind of lady she is, but this sounds like she wanted Joseph and she made it her way to try and get that and therefore trapped in it. And bless her, she was left stranded, ran away. But I think it's again so interesting in a place of where he has again been raised up to lead this household where there's still such opposition and still such like wickedness, as he says, trying to prod him and trying to like turn him against the character of God and and being who he's been called to be and being raised up to be. But as you were saying before, like it's such a clear example of how his character has been growing and how God has him working in that. And because he literally has the integrity to be like, no, I don't want that. I'm not going to do that. And makes plans to not be near her and then literally runs away.
That's a very good distinction, what you just made. Because like the distinction between like, maybe he did even want it. You know, maybe he did want it. Maybe he,
I don't know.
Maybe he was extremely tempted towards it. And I know for me, this is my favorite passage to come to whenever I am tempted by the narrative that we often hear, which is just do what makes you feel good. Just do. Oof. Oh, if it makes you happy, then you can do it, right? And it's like this thing that we even hear in Christian circles. Like, if it's making you happy, then it's fine. But clearly, in this story, we see a moment in Joseph's life where he was confronted and introduced to an opportunity that might have brought him satisfaction and pleasure, and it would have made him. Like it would have been nice for him to sleep with Potiphar's wife.
And indulge in it, yeah.
Indulge in it, right? But we know clearly that that wasn't God's will for his life. And we see him as an example of stepping away from that. And instead of choosing what feels right, or instead of choosing what would make him happy for a short term, he chose what he knew to be right. And he chose to look at God. And even in scripture, it says, the heart is deceitful amongst all things. And so our heart and our feelings, they're great as indicators.
That's right.
They're greatest indicators to try indicate what's going on in our life, what's going feelings. On around us.
Yeah.
But they become terrible masters for us when they start controlling us. Right. And so truly we need to, as Christians, be careful as when we are allowing our emotions and our feelings and our temptations and our desires and our dreams to take over us, because they could lead us astray, because the Bible says our heart is deceitful amongst all things. I love Joseph's example here. He steps up, he said, with great power comes great responsibility. Big up Uncle Ben. But that's true. Like he has been put in a position of responsibility in this house, and he showed integrity, and God has had his hand on him. And even though God was with him, brother was sent to prison. So
yeah, well, just because, spoilers, mate.
Oh shoot. But you'll find out.
As we read on.
When we read on. Yeah.
Should we read on?
Let's do it.
Okay. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him the story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Whoa. I just, you know what, just reading that last bit, the fact that the warder like gave Joseph responsibility, and when Joseph was in Potiphar's house, Potiphar gave him responsibility over all things. I just think like God is like using every single situation, place and environment that Joseph's put into for his good, and almost like to train him up for this greater purpose that he had in his life. Like, you know, making good out of a bad situation, like him being in prison, he could have just easily just been in there, you know, not doing anything. But then the warder was like, oh no, like I can see that he's got great, like, I can give him responsibilities that he'll actually take care of, and to like look after like a group of prisoners. Like he could have easily like opened up the doors to all those prisoners and like let them all out. Do you know what I mean? But he didn't. And it just shows the integrity in him, and that something is definitely changing and growing. And yeah, I think for our lives, like God will use any situation to train us up for what he has. Like you said, great preparation, time for preparation when it comes to like purpose in our lives too. So yeah, what do you guys think?
I'm just struck by God's grace and mercy on Joseph throughout the story. Wherever he goes, whatever he does, it's almost as if whatever he does almost touches to gold. And again, he's a special guy.
Like even in the absolute dumps of prison,
it becomes gold. And it's because, and this we've used this word, is this word favor upon him, but it's like it's the Lord has been with him and continues to be with him, and the word favor just means that things, good things are happening to him wherever he goes. The Lord's favor is with him.
I mean, and he's still in prison.
He's in prison, and
like God hasn't removed him from the situation.
He's going to be spent a long time in there, but he has the Lord with him, and that's his comfort. It's encouraging for me. I mean, I don't know if I'll have the same favor as Joseph. Again, I don't know if my assignment is as needs the same favor. But it's encouraging to see the Lord work in the story.
Well, and I think it's also nice that we can see the full story, because actually in him, for him in this moment in time, he's been wrongfully accused and thrown in prison. And so that's pretty rough. He won't be seeing the gold in it, I don't think, in that moment where he's like, I'm literally not in the wrong. Yeah, and I think what you're saying about favor is also really interesting to observe, of it talking about how all the Egyptian household was blessed because of him. And then everything in the prison, it was, yeah, he had success in whatever he did in the prison. And actually his favor was about blessing others. Like it wasn't about him, but the favor was, it's all, yeah, it's focused on those around him and God working through him, which I think is really cool. And it's cool to see how that also feeds into the rest of his story and what he ends up leading. And again, his entire purpose is to bless and save other people. It's not about him and the position he's in, but he's put in that position in order to serve others. And one little thing that I do quite like in this little section that my dad told me about, big up Mark. It's when it talks about Potiphar being burned with anger. And it's like, well, who is he angry at? Is he angry at Joseph or is he angry at his wife? So instead of actually Joseph being like killed and murdered, Potiphar's like, actually, but I trust you. He's still thrown in prison, but actually is thrown in prison under his watch and then still given responsibility, which shows how highly Potiphar thought of him, where of course he has to punish if his wife has said such things. But I think it's really interesting that even him coming through to becoming a slave and coming to Potiphar, and then he was put in that specific prison to then, you know, meet the cupbearer and whatever later on, to then get, it's all really linked. And I think it's interesting to see Potiphar's part in that as well. It's not necessarily like something for us to like lean on, but I just thought it was an interesting little
That's really interesting,
an interesting little nugget. My dad was like, think about that one, Izzy, and I was like, okay,
I like that. I think actually back to the whole favor thing. Sorry.
No, no, please jump back.
I just think that like God often will bless us to bless others, and it's actually not about us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just something that I just like felt like needed to like reiterate and almost say again, that like favor from God is like, it's solely out of, it is out of like, we're like almost out of the picture because it's really just not about us at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like God blessing us means that we then have that responsibility to follow that through and bless others around us, whether that could be like through your time, monetary, you know, anything. Yeah. The things that you feel blessed by the Lord, you freely receive, freely give. Mm-hmm. We spoke about that before a while back, but you know, I just think that's also almost like a call for action for all of us, where we can, you know, give as we have received so freely. We should freely give to others too, and bless others. But yeah.
Would you say that is your take the way for today?
Ew, I hate that saying, but yes.
You wrote that, did you not?
I did write that. The take the way for me would be like, freely received, freely give. So I want to learn how to bless others with the blessing that I've been given. How Potiphar is clearly doing that.
Matty, what's your take away? I said it wrong. That's
take the way. I don't know. What do we know about the story? We know that Joseph, he a little bit unwise, but clearly chosen by God.
Young, naive.
Even young and naive people are chosen by God. There's hope for you, Izzy.
I'm older than all of you. All right.
We know that envy causes bitter. And we see God's favor on Joseph, not so that he can continue to big himself up, but actually he's very humbled, so that he can bless others. I don't know. I take away a lot from the story. I like Joseph. You turn me over.
Watch the musical now.
I shall not.
Learn this. Oh, okay.
I'll watch the DreamWorks movie again.
That's true. Okay, great.
What about you, Izzy?
My take.